There's a good ball played in for Tony Morley. Oh, he must be! And it is! Peter Will!
Welcome, everyone, to From Witten to Rotterdam, an Astonville podcast. We're your hosts. My name is Eddie.
Hi, and I'm James.
Pascal couldn't join us today, but we are really, really delighted to be joined by Samuel Timms, Villa and Proud, founder and chair, I believe. So, Sam, how are you doing today?
Yeah, no, not too bad, apart from the result earlier on today.
Oh, yeah, we're definitely going to get into it. And for those of you who haven't looked at the scores yet, when this does come out, which will likely be on Monday morning, Aston Villa 1, Leicester City 2, a drab performance really highlighted by, you know, all the Twitter rumors to be true. Jack Grealish, unfortunately, our captain, not able to join us for the fixture, but we'll get into that a little bit later. But I think this is a good place to start. You know, running up to the fixture today, I believe, you know, Leicester in really good form. We did them over earlier in the season. I'll start with you, Sam. Like, knowing the fortunes have kind of shifted a little bit for not only them, but for us over the course since our last, you know, clash with the Foxes, if you will. Like, I'm wondering, how are you feeling heading into the game? Things you were worried about, things you were confident about? Just give us your general thoughts in the lead up.
Yeah, no, definitely. I think leading up to the game, obviously everything was evolving around Jack, if he was going to play, if it was rumours, if it was like a tactical manoeuvre from the club to make everyone feel like, you know, Leicester going to have to play differently. Because, you know, when Jack plays, teams have to adapt differently to putting many more players on Jack to close him down quickly and close down the angles. But it was kind of weird, like, because we didn't have a midweek match, games have been coming thick and fast. And I think we just sort of, for me personally as a fan, just sort of forgot the last time we played. It's because it's been such a hectic schedule because of COVID and everything like that. It seems a bit weird to have a whole week off. It seems like a year. But I think going into the game, I was a bit apprehensive. You know, we can't take any credit away from Leicester. They're a fantastic outfit, and you know, they're second in the league. So yeah, it was always going to be a tough game. And just into that, you know, the fact as well is that this year with a lot of teams, their home performances, it's just not right. It just seems to be the away teams that are getting the results, you know, and vice versa. We did that at the King Power Stadium later on in the season. But yeah, just an interesting one. I just think in the middle with Barkley, you know, I just feel like we haven't got the John McGinn if we used to. And I know he's having to adapt this season. You know, I think we all want the John McGinn that we know, that we saw in the Championship. I know it's a different level, but we know he's got it for the Premier League. But I just wish we could see a bit more of, you know, in John kicking a ball like he can do.
Yeah, you know, it's not quite the same yet. We saw it at the start of last season. He is at the level of Premier League, so he's got it in him, but he hasn't arrived yet, unfortunately, recently at least. Me going into the game, I thought Leicester were going to do a job on us, and I think I said last week I was pretty pessimistic for me. In the top two teams this season in the league, consistency-wise, they seem to give everyone a game. Anyone that can score five goals at Man City are a decent team. And I think we need to remember that. First, going into the game, I sort of had it in my mind that a draw would be a good result. But when the Jack news broke on Friday, I think the first we all heard of it was different footballers taking about the fantasy football team. You're thinking, okay, one, how people get hold of that information. And two, is it legitimate? You know, is it a ploy, like you said, Sam? But yeah, I went through the different stages of grief, really, as the days went on over the weekend. And it was up until 1:05, and you see the reality hit. Okay, he's not in the squad. Now we're wondering, what does it mean? Is it a long-term thing or not? But looking at the Leicester City lineup, for me, they were prepared for Jack playing by the looks of things. You know, they looked like they were going to double up on him on the right-hand side. So it's quite a surprise to see the two sort of white players in there, white-sided players in there. But as I went into the game, I was getting more and more pessimistic, to be honest, you know, without our talisman, if you like. What were your thoughts, Eddie?
Yeah, I think in the lead up, I had a lot of the same feelings as you, sort of, you know, the five stages of grief, just thinking about like, oh, what are we going to do without Jack? Oh, what happened the last time we didn't have Jack for a long run of games? And I think my coping mechanism, I just did like a little bit of a social media cleanse yesterday. I just like was not on very much, just trying to avoid all news. And then I woke up this morning, you know, with the time difference. And first thing I did was look at the lineup and I was like, oh, it was real. So, you know, I think that's as much as you can do. But, you know, then it comes down to the professionals who, you know, have to prep every week regardless of who else is in the lineup. So, Sam, I'll come back to you real quick. What did you make of how we sort of lined up that starting 11? Because I think I had some questions, especially after last week, about some of the folks who were selected.
Yeah, no, to be fair, I thought that was the side I would have picked. You know, I think the thing is, like, Elmo, you know, I know he obviously hasn't been playing as regularly, and that's because the starting 11 are the starting 11. You know, Matty Cash being out, you know, you've got to bring in Elmo. And personally for me, I think Elmo has a cracking cross on him. I was disappointed today to actually see that he couldn't get as many balls in to that box as an EJ. I thought our second half was far better. But yeah, I mean, I'm a really positive person, so I don't like to be pessimistic, because at the end of the day, as a fan, you know, it's sometimes, especially right now, that we can't go to Villa Park. You know, it's as fans, it's sort of out of our control to sort of get any kind of result from the players, because we're watching from the comfort of our own home. But I think El Ghazi, I never want to talk poorly of any player, because I think he plays everything to the best of his ability. I just feel that he gets given a lot of chances, albeit not any chances today for him, which is quite a disappointing game, to be fair. But, you know, when he has had the opportunities, you know, he's given 100 opportunities and he's still not scoring as many goals as I would like him to score. I know that could come across quite harsh, but yeah, I think the starting 11 is definitely how I would have started. You know, I think Bertrand, you know, I think Try always starts the game always quite slow. You know, we know that his defensive side of the game, it has got better, but his defensive side of the game is very poor and he doesn't really give any cover. But he got the goal today. So it was good to have that side of it. But yeah, no, I mean, it is what we can. And at the end of the day, we've got to look at it and think, you know, a whole squad, there's places to improve, but we have to also realise where we were at the beginning of last season and the end of last season to where we are at, where we are right now.
Yeah, I think we on the pod last week were sort of, obviously pre-Grealish this was, where we were all thinking, is it time for Nakamba to get another go? He's not let us down in the games he's played this season. And McGinn's sort of looked, as we touched on earlier, not quite at it, really. I don't know if it's a fitness-wise post-COVID, whether he got COVID or he just struggled since, you know, lack of training that week. But he just hasn't seemed quite at it recently. Barkley was one for me pre-game. Again, we're not a pessimistic bunch here, but we I think we've all seen recently, Barkley seems to drift in and out of games. And when he's touched lets him down, or he's not near the ball, he seems to notice it a bit more than others, because he's not really the dynamic sort of player to get around the pitch. Bit like from what we've seen of Samson and Ramsey when he came on today, that they both have that energy level that doesn't seem apparent with Barkley. So for me, I would have liked to have seen the Nakamba in there today, starting the game. But I do wonder what the selection influence was because of Jack not being there. Would it have been a bigger risk to, you know, to take out a couple of experienced players and bring in a couple of more inexperienced players when you're missing, you know, your talisman? Elmo sort of picked himself, I suppose, today, really. Just, you know, whilst Kessler Hayden's probably got the potential, it's too risky, too throwing me at this point, I'd say. And like you said, Sam, he's good going forward, isn't he? With crosses into the box, he is probably the best crosser we've got at the club. It's just unfortunately defensively, he's not Matty Cash. But that all said, we don't have access to the training, do we, in the week? So we don't know how these players performed all week, and you can only trust in Dino's judgment. He's obviously picked a team that he thinks is going to win the game. He's had the advantage of seeing them all week, and he thought, you know what, they deserve to have another go.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing I was a little surprised about, I mean, I did think there was going to be some midfield rotation, but I also realized that, like, with Jack out, you have to lean on the creative forces you have in the team, and Barkley on his day is definitely one of those. So that made sense to me, and I'll be, you know, like, I would have liked to have seen something different, but, like, I probably would have done the same thing if put in that position. I guess the one thing that worried me a little bit is knowing Harvey Barnes, like, just, like, a really direct player in Elmo, you know, for all he does well, I think, you know, he's not as quite as quick as he was in his younger years. I think I would have liked to seen Trezeguet on that side to give it a little cover. Like, I think Traore deserves that spot, but I think, you know, given circumstances, that might have been one switch I would have made. But I mean, Bert took his goal really well, so you can't really fault him too much for that. But, you know, heading into the first half, it was certainly not, we didn't cover ourselves in glory, if you will, you know, going down 2-0 very quickly and, you know, in pretty quick succession. So I mean, the first by just a very well-placed James Maddison goal took a little nick off of Mings's heels. I think Emmy probably wasn't expecting it to take that little bit of extra drift. But, you know, these things happen. And the second one just took a really almost innocuous throw in, kind of led to the whole defense being on sixes and sevens in the middle of the box. So, James, I'll start with you. Just your thoughts on the two quick goals there. They happen so quickly. I feel like it just makes sense to talk about them in the same breath. So,
yeah, I mean, I just rewatched them again just now, just to, you know, just to cast a memory, because the thing in England is when they've got several games on Sky, they quickly turn them over and you don't have much analysis after the game. So, I picked up Tielemans was in acres of space for both goals, actually. So the first one, it was just a long punch into the box, towards the box. I mean, Vardy had a challenge with Konsa. Konsa didn't do particularly well. And then it's fallen to, I think it fell to Barnes. He had loads of space. Elmo got nowhere near him. So he had the time to pick out Maddison, who again was in so much space. I'm just wondering where our defensive midfielders are, really, at that point. But Mings could have come out perhaps a little bit closer. And as you say, it's Martinez is just probably unsighted a little bit. I think looking at the replay, he's got a hand to it. Would he like to have kept the one out? Probably. The second one, he's going to be really disappointed with. A goalkeeper of Martinez's standards, he's our, you know, one of our players of the season, has been exceptional. So I don't want to criticise him, but he wants to do that, but Vardy's shot better. You know, he's just put it into a terrible area. And what you hate to see is that their player reacting quicker than ours. Barnes was quick off the mark, saw the ball and pull it away. Elmo, yeah, wasn't there quick enough, unfortunately. Don't want to blame Elmo for the goals, but he's had a big say in both of them, and you wonder if they would have happened if Cash was in the team. So what did you reckon, Sam?
Yeah, you know, I think the problem we have, and I think this is the problem with the season so far, just in terms of a lot of teams, when teams do score, there seems to be a goal either end quite quickly afterwards. It's sort of changed the whole dynamic of the game, and fans, you know, if we were to go a goal down, fans would be the ones that would push you forward. And that's why you can concede a goal quite quickly. And to be fair, it's not the first time we've done it this season where we've gone and conceded a goal straight away after that. And picking up on errors, I'm just going back through my head now, like you were saying then, you know, Sky don't really give you much analysis straight afterwards. Yeah, I mean, obviously Martinez is going to be disappointed. I must admit, I do see this too often. And, you know, I love Mings. I think he's, you know, I think he's a cracking player and he's really, really stepped up. You know, and I know he's more of a leader. And where I do see Mings is, you know, he's kind of plateaued. He's at his peak. You know, he's not going to go. Ezra Konsa is on the up. You know, he's going to continue to get better, stronger, faster, better. Yeah, everything that you would want. From a younger player moving forward. But I think with Mings, and one area that does frustrate me is that he doesn't block the ball enough for me. And he's, you know, I'm five foot eight. I play football and soccer, if I'm to say, is I like to block the ball and I can. And I just feel that, like you said, he's Martinez is unsighted. You know, he's Mings was actually in the wrong area, and it's fine because at the end of the day, like, take us back to the training facility on Monday, you know, and go over it, and they will do it. They'll do videos over it, and they say, look, this is what you need to do. But I just don't think we close enough down on these balls, and someone like Maddison has to be closed down. Anytime he has the ball, your job is just to close down straight away. And if you give someone of his ability that much time, you know, he scores a goal. So,
yeah, I mean, I think that kind of covers it. You know, I'm 5'6", and I think one of the few good parts of my game when I was actually playing was probably getting in front of a few things playing as a fullback. But no, I 100% agree. You know, a lot of space. And I think that was sort of the tale of the first half. We were just giving them a lot of respect, but I think on the sort of inverse of that, I just don't think they were giving us much respect. I think they sensed we were a little bit sort of shell-shocked, just knowing that we've had to make this change in the lineup so quickly. And it showed there was some reticence the entire game. But the second half is going into it. Actually, before we do that, I think I just want to talk about the second goal really quick. Just because, you know, that throw in, watching it back, and you know, you don't want to single Barkley out again because the entire defense was a little, you know, disorganized that entire time, but very much shuffling and didn't really track Tielemans. That was one thing that I just kind of was, I remember I stood up and tried to silently scream so I didn't wake anyone up in the apartment, but just seeing him just like run right by him and then him just kind of jogging into closing the space. Do you think he could have done a little bit more to sort of get back in and help out with that one? Sam, and then going on James.
Yeah, I mean, of course, yeah. The thing is, like, goals are you know, are basically the product of mistakes from teams, and we all do it. To be fair, I kind of switched off at the time we conceded the second one. But what the key part that you said is that we just weren't set at the back. You know, there was a disorganization, which was quite, you know, it was disappointing to see. Obviously, you don't want to see anything, but, you know, where the organization is poor. I just think that, you know, you're right. Martinez is going to be disappointed with the goal. It was conceded, but again, it was in a position where there was no real threat. And then the threat just happened. And I think Elmo and Ezra both ran into each other as well at one point. And I know we don't really do it anymore, and I know it's part of the sort of philosophy that's played in this country, but we don't just go and smack a ball out. But that was a ball that fell to Elmo's feet, where he just had to launch that ball away. He sort of like flapped at it. But yeah, it is what it is. So what are your thoughts?
Yeah, he's criticised Barkley because I think at the moment he's in a poor run of form, but probably Barkley is a long way from the goal at that point. You know, there's a lot for Leicester to do to score. So I'm not going to put this one on him, I don't think. You know, like you say, we need a catalogue of mistakes for a goal to happen. And there was a catalogue of mistakes on this one. Barkley's not helped us at the start, but it's got to go a long way to get into the back of our net. And there's a lot of players that could have stopped that. So I'm not putting this one on Barkley. And the thing with Barkley as well is he's not in the team for his defensive ability. You know, he's not an all-round, all-action midfielder. He's an attacking midfielder who can, you know, destroy teams, which he's done earlier in the season, but he's not there at the moment. Yeah, it's a disappointing goal. It's pretty unvillain-like this season, if we're truthful, because our defence has been exceptional. You know, it's sort of a last-season goal, if you like. So I'm not going to be too down on it. I hope they do go away, though, and analyse it. What I was quite surprised to hear was Dean Smith's comments. I think it was in the pre-Leicester conference where he said they hadn't really analysed the Brighton game. I don't get that. Surely you analyse every game you play, but maybe that's just tongue-in-cheek, I don't know. But I hope they do go back and analyse these goals because there were errors across the team that could have prevented them.
No, I fully agree. And just, yeah, I mean, thinking about the way it moved on to the second half as well, clearly the adjustments were there to be made, you know, thinking about the things he probably didn't do as well in the Brighton game. It's not like Dino is not paying attention and sort of doing like that. I didn't hear that comment, to be honest. But, you know, we did come out and do a few different things and, you know, veered away, which I think is some of the sort of half-hearted criticism a lot of folks will throw at Smith. You know, oh, he has no plan B. But, like, it's clearly we were doing something a little different. So we started a lot brighter in the second half, and I think that led to quite a lovely move leading to the Traore goal. Target in on the side, El Ghazi heading it right back to him, and a lovely cross McGinn kind of flicked it on as well. Yeah, what did you make of our start? What do you think we were doing a little differently? Sam, I'll start with you. I mean, it looks like there was a little bit more intent, but I think there was a little bit of tactical change there as well. I'm not entirely sure. Where do you think it came from? Because it clearly looked a lot better than it did in the first half.
Well, the whole point of a half time is there's conversation. And I don't think, I mean, Dean would not have been happy going into that changing room. Shakespeare, none of them will be. I just think they went out there with a bit more purpose. It's just a shame that we didn't really push on from that goal that we got. But we did improve second half, which was, you know, we won the second half. You know, it was 1-0 to us. So yeah, it's always a difficult one because I think that you're not relying on, you know, Ross Barkley is good, but he's not a leader. And you kind of needed in that middle a leadership. And, you know, Douglas Luiz, I think, is a fantastic player. You know, obviously John McGinn. But I saw too much through the whole 90 minutes of people sort of, especially with Ross Barkley, actually, someone of, like, people were communicating to him. And after he'd done, like, a missed pass or a header somewhere else, and he was looking around him, like, people were sort of like maybe saying you had time or whatever. But second half just seemed to be better. We just couldn't seem to, you know, Ollie Watkins, you know, he does so much great stuff, and we just didn't have a clear-cut chance today for him. But this is why I like Bertrand. You know, he was in the right place, you know, right on that 6-yard, you know, he was doing his job. He was in a position where, you know, to sort of overload in that box. But yeah, a much better second half, but obviously you still look at the whole 90 minutes and just think that the better team today definitely won. You know, and that's all I've got to pretty much say on that.
No, I think that's a fair reflection, Sam. I mean, the fact that Leicester played on Thursday night, I think we need to factor in as well. They cut out the blocks really fast first half, and they put the game to bed first half, if you like. Second half, Dino has said something at half-time, apparently. He's got into the players again. But I did see some tactical tweets as well. I saw El Ghazi pick up the ball in the first minute of the second half. He sort of got in between the lines, which he never did in the first half at all. He just drifted back ahead of the defensive midfielders, picked the ball up, and then got back into space. It just felt like we were very rigid in the first half, which we know with Evan Jack, he's not a rigid player. But some of our other players can be quite stuck to position sometimes. But it's great to see Target get down the wing like he does so often with Jack this season. He's been so good. And to, you know, deliver the business for the goal. Watkins caused a bit of havoc, I think, at the near post. And Troy Oray getting onto a McGinn touch. So it's good to see all those bodies in the box. It just reflects that, you know, something's been said at half-time and they're all pumped up and ready to go. But then I was quite surprised with Leicester, the substitutions they made. All their substitutions seemed to be bringing on defensive midfielders after defensive midfielders. And it felt like they were going to invite us onto them. It's obviously a bit of a blessing that Maddison went off from our point of view. But that all said, we didn't create an awful lot, for being truthful. You know, we didn't really look like we were going to score a second. I think the Mings headed towards the very end. I was jumping up for that, but it wasn't that close, really. Like you said, Sam, I think Watkins, again, another tireless performance. He doesn't stop running, does he? He's a great athlete. And what I would like is an option on the bench, a striking option. And I can't wait for Wesley to come back just to give us that extra option up front, really. And I think in this situation, I'd probably be looking perhaps at sticking Watkins out wide. I think there's potential with Jack not in the team. I think he might give us the outlet that we need on that side. I think he perhaps a better footballer than El Ghazi. And he can come in off that left-hand side and score the goals like he did at Brentford. So as soon as Wesley gets back, the better, really, just to give us that extra option. But as we say, hopefully Jack's back soon as well.
Yeah, and, you know, no point dwelling on it too much. The game's over. The result's over, and, you know, we're just going to need to kick on until next week. But quickly, before we do start talking about Leeds a little bit, this year, man of the match, because, you know, I think despite the overall negative, I think there was some bright spots there. So, James, let's start with you, and then Sam.
Yeah, said it already. I think it was target for me. But I think it's been exceptional this season, and yet another good performance from him. I don't think he did anything wrong at all. I'll say he probably had a bit of an easy time of it on that side of the pitch, but he did everything he could, and he was got forward again as well. So, yeah, good performance from him.
Yeah, no, it's kind of difficult actually to pick anyone out. I hadn't even really thought about it. I didn't even look at it in that light, and I'm the positive person. So I think with just thinking through it now, rattling through, you know, yeah, probably target. You know, he gave a lot of energy. He does. It's just, you know, that missing link, because that link is Jack, and that Jack is the link to Barkley, is the link to target. And then on that left-hand side, it's a killer side. But yeah, probably, yeah, we'll have to go to target, you know, and that's a defensive player on the wing. So
yeah. And the fans would agree, and I think I would agree too. I think he just, you know, it's hard to sometimes to give it to a defensive player when you do have a couple like real messy goals, but I think he acquitted himself really well. And I don't think he was directly at fault for any one of them. And, you know, besides that, he also put in a wonderful ball that led to our little moment of magic. So hopefully that long may that continue. And I actually saw something that I think one of the folks in the Birmingham Mail posted beforehand, that in the director's box, Cash had a short conversation with Southgate. So, you know, I'm sure if he caught any eye of that, I'm sure he had a point to prove as well, hoping that he's not too left out, especially with all going on with the England squad coming up to the summer. But yeah, I think it's a good time as ever to move on. You know, we have a full 6 days off before we head, I believe we're away at Elm Road. Yeah, so we're heading up to Leeds. Who are coming off a loss themselves, but they have a chance to redeem themselves. They have a Tuesday fixture against Southampton. And again, just a very different, tougher proposition for us. You know, looking back to the last game, they really trounced us. I don't think we matched up particularly well just based on the way they play. But I'd love to hear some folks' thoughts, especially because they've had, you know, a topsy-turvy season. I think some fans have tried to manufacture a bit of a rivalry, but I don't think that's necessarily anything to, you know, I think it's just positive to have a big club like Leeds back in the Premier League, just like it's good for us to be back. So, Sam, I'll start with you, just thinking about Leeds, looking at their season. How are you feeling going into this one?
Yeah, I'm just going to say this off the cusp. There's no comparison between Leeds and Villa. So I just want to get that over. I think that, just to wrap up this sort of rivalry, I think Leeds, it's just Leeds anyway, I think they're overexcited that they're back in the Premier League. And it's good. You know, it's good. It's good competition. I think Leeds are a good outfit. And I'm trying to think of really good ways to say this. But yeah, I think they, you know, Bielsa himself obviously is a tactician. You know, he knows what he wants, but he drums in so much, he wants so much energy out of his players. It's gonna cause issues later on through the season, and touch wood. those things do happen against us next week. But yeah, I mean, it's exciting to see the football that is out on display. I think when people do judge you know, Leeds United, I think at the very beginning of the season everyone was raving about them, but they still weren't really winning games. And the one that was closest to it was Villa. And Villa, you know, and ironically, didn't even turn up against Leeds. I mean, Leeds did play fantastically well, and you've got to give them the credit for that against us. But yeah, I'm just being a completely biased fan, where I don't know. Leeds United are just a club that I just don't best please like. So I'm just sorry, I'm just going out of there. Sorry for any listeners listening and thinking, who is this Sam? So yeah, I'm not a massive fan of Leeds.
Don't worry, I think most of the Villa population are the same, to be honest. But it's a faux rivalry though, isn't it? Let's face it, we don't care about them really. But they're a good team. Let's give them a bit of credit. They are a good team. They do play good stuff, but there's some teams they play against better than others. And unfortunately, I fear they gave us quite a good hiding at Villa Park. And I don't know. I'm not looking forward to it, put it that way. Especially with minus Jack, which I'm expecting. I'm expecting another tough game. The only thing I will say is, like you said, Sam, they're playing again in the week, and they do put a lot of effort into games. So I think last season, I believe COVID helped them massively, just get over the line. You know, the break that they had the season before, they were doing really well, and you know, they tailed off. So you do wonder, are they going to tail off again this season? I think they've got enough in the bank to be fine, you know, in terms of staying up. But you know, are they going to keep up what they've done so far? I'm not so sure they are. You know, Bamford looked like prime Ronaldo against us last. He can't do it again, surely. You know, he's. I don't want to, you know, jinx it, but crikey, he was so good that night. I'm hoping we can do something there, but it's going to be a tough game again. You know, but it'd be good. It should be a good game as well. It should be a good game for the neutral.
No, I fully agree. And you know, I think one of the things that was a little tough about the last time out was just the way they send numbers forward. I just feel like, I mean, obviously a lot of things went wrong for us, but I just feel like they overwhelmed and they attack in waves in a way I don't think we were necessarily. I think we were a little naive going into the last game in terms of thinking we were going to be on the ball more as much as we weren't. So just, you know, thinking about that, thinking about not only this past fixture, but, you know, Brighton last time as well. What do you think if you were in Dino's shoes, you know, we'd need to really do differently in terms of setting up, in terms of how you'd approach this? And, you know, I'll start with you, Sam.
You've got to match them with energy. You can't go into a Leeds game, a Bielsa team, I'm going to say a Bielsa team. You can't go into a game where you don't match them with energy, because they won't stop, which is credit to them, and credit to Bielsa and to the players. But Dean needs his side to really be go. They can't start the game like they did today. They were really slow, lethargic. They need to be quick. They need to be fast. And you know, I'm hoping that you know, Jack is going to be back. And I'm hoping, just by the words that they said, you know, as a precaution, nothing serious. But obviously, they haven't really given us any sort of details, but that I've read on. But yeah, you've got to go in that game matching them. You know, I want to see more from the midfield. I want to see Ross Barkley. There was actually a point from today, from the Leicester game, that, you know, Barkley could have just smashed the ball and he didn't. You know, I want to see more shots taken on from midfield. What Leeds will do is they will hound you down, but that does create space for other players. You know, every game they play, even if Jack was playing, they will still put two players on a player and close them down quickly. I just hope we turn up, because I think for all Villa fans listening, you know, and it's probably the same for a lot of clubs, you know, we know this, but I just hope we turn up. Today we didn't really turn up, you know, against Leicester, and I think, you know, the Leeds game, we're on the road, and touch wood, on the road again seems to be something that makes the away teams want to sort of just play football. And the home team seem to be the ones that are, you know, more defensive and not as experimental in going forward. But yeah, you have to match them in energy. If you can do that, then you have every chance of getting something out of the game, always.
Yeah, I agree. I think energy is the key, as you say. And for me, I'd love to see Ramsey out there. I think when he came on the pitch today, he just had that buzz about him that we were missing, I think, from the start. So I'd love to see him in the team. I think he played against Wolves last, I believe, as from the start. And he didn't do much wrong there. Nakamba as well, physicality in midfield. I like the idea of that. So probably calling for the same things I was calling for last week, in truth. So if we can match them in terms of pace around the pitch and have that threat on the counter. We did show signs early on today that we were going to expose Evans and Sonshu with Watkins. And we just seemed to forget about it, though, as the game went on. So, you know, if we can get them on the counter, you know, I think there's a chance we can score. But we've got to, firstly, you've got to, you know, be man for man in terms of pace all over the pitch, because any one of their team can go from one side of the pitch to the other. It's incredible the way they do it. There's not many, no other team like it, let's face it. It's the way Bielsa's you know, created. So looking forward to it. Should be a good game, as we say. But yeah, Ramsey in for me. I think Troy always done enough to keep his position. the difficulty for me is out wide on left if we are going to miss Jack. And whilst they are saying it's a mild thing, I just keep thinking back to the way the Barkley injury is described and his recovery is described, and it seemed to last absolutely forever. So I'm still a bit cautious on that front at the moment. So I'm expecting Grealish to be out for a little while yet. Let's see, though.
Would you give Sanson a start? I think he looked lively and, you know, had a little bit of that energy going in. Obviously, you know, it's in a cameo appearance, but I think, you know, I don't want to fault the folks who are in, but I think there's also that little bit of exhaustion. You know, we don't know how COVID's still affecting folks, you know, having a lot of friends who suffered from it. Like, there is lingering effects, and you've seen that across the league as well. So, you know, him, I think Ramsey looked really bright. Do you think a little bit of freshening up, if not because of form, if, you know, just because of energy, is going to be important? Knowing, however, that, like, you know, you don't want to throw a lot of inexperienced heads into the Wolves, if you will.
Yeah, I think it's a shout, isn't it? I mean, I probably wouldn't make three changes. I wouldn't bring a whole new midfield in. So it's, for me, it's probably Sanson or Ramsey or Nakamba. So you've got three there. So I think one of them at least deserves a shot. Sanson, I suppose it was interesting. He wasn't the first sub brought on today. You know, that, or even, well, he wasn't even the second, was he? He was the third. So I suppose that Ramsey came on ahead of him. So whether that means he's Ramsey's slightly ahead in the pecking order at the moment, remains to be seen, I suppose.
Yeah, no, I think yeah, we haven't seen anything from Sanson. My French accent there. We as fans are still trying to figure him out. Obviously, we haven't seen him out on a pitch. And the thing is, we need to realise as well and respectfully, you know, the French league is a completely different league to the Premier League. And I just think that, you see Barkley, obviously, he's quite annoyed. And I don't think he's annoyed with coming off because of the management or anything like that. I think he's just annoyed with himself. You know, he's a winner. You know, he wants to be a winner. It's going to be a difficult one because, again, we don't know. We don't see training, how these players are playing. I do think Ramsey is a fantastic player. I think he's so underrated for his age to just seamlessly come into the side and just, you don't ever notice the mistakes. You just see him playing and you think he's been playing for ages. I personally don't think anything will change because if he's bringing Sanson on, you know, with the like last 7 minutes, 10 minutes or so, I can't see why he would start him because he's just not there. I just don't think and especially, look, we just said at the beginning of this that you need to go in there with the same energy. So you can't have a player that's potentially not going to be at full capacity in terms of the speed that they want, the agility, etc. I don't think they will change it. I think it will be Ross Barkley again. I think if anything, you know, I'm disappointed in El Ghazi. I just want, there was a few little bursts of pace that he did today against Leicester, but I just feel that in this game, you know, you want El Ghazi to really be running behind, you know, those balls through. And, you know, I saw McGinn trying to do a few balls today, and to be fair, McGinn was off it, you know, quite a few passes that were going. I'm not bringing it back into this Leicester game, but yeah, I think that midfield, I don't think he's going to change it. I think they just need to focus on this Leeds game, and they're going to know that they need to be at their 100% in terms of energy, passion, desire, determination, grit, everything in that game, because if you give anything less, then how could you expect to get all 3 points? You know, the team aren't just going to turn up and get 3 points. So it's going to be an interesting game, and the games against Leeds are always interesting with Villa Leeds. So find out.
Yeah. And I'm going to have everyone kind of stick their neck out a little bit. Score predictions. And if you're feeling so bold, Sam, you can also include goal scores if you think there'll be any.
I feel like every time I do a score prediction, I always get it horribly wrong. But as you've asked so politely, I will give a score prediction. So I'm going to say, I think we're going to change our fortune around next week. And I think we're going to win 3-1. And I think first goal scorer will be Ollie Watkins.
Love that. James, are you feeling as positive, especially after we hang out with Pascal on the WhatsApp the whole time?
Yeah, oh, I don't know. Oh, that sounds amazing, but no, I can't see it. okay, let's just say I'll take a 2-2. If that's on the table, please. I'd love a 2-2, and that would do me just fine, because I think it'd be an entertaining game. And as to who's going to score, let's give El Ghazi a goal. Go on. Let's hope he can score for us. It'd be nice.
Classic Desmond. I like that. I think we're going to take it 1-0, especially if we do match them with energy. I think we're going to kind of cancel each other out a little bit, but I do think we'll nick one. Especially after the last performance, I do think the whole week's going to be spent really trying to knock out a few of those defensive errors, and I think it's going to be a tighter one. I think we'll create less, but I think we'll just about nick it, and I'm going to have Traore kind of keep up his good form, you know, really come in and put us over the line. But yeah, let's hope for something good this next week, you know, especially after today. I think it can only really go up, so let's put it that way. All right. So that does it for our game analysis, but I think now is as good a time as ever to do our little global villain section. And it's a little bit different this year, week. Sam, you know, just remind the nice people where you're coming from, because typically we have guests from all over the world, but you're a little bit more local, are you not?
Yeah, no. So I was born in Sutton Coldfield, pretty much on the doorstep of Villa Park, not too far away. Raised in Warwickshire, the land of Shakespeare. And I currently live in Kent, which is the Garden of England, it's supposed to be called. So I'm from the UK and live in England. Sorry, I can't even get my words out then.
Fantastic. And, you know, just saying, I'm sure you must have either grown up into a family of Villa fans being so close, or is it something you kind of selected more for yourself?
No, I've been a Villa fan all my life. My dad is a Villa fan. I've had a season ticket since the age of 6. I'm now the age of 30. So a good amount of experience at Villa Park. I didn't really pay too much attention, I don't think, at the earlier ages. But yeah, so football and Aston Villa has been everything part of our family. And to be fair, it's a passion that seems to grow and grow and grow as we get older. And I'm really, really proud to be a Villa fan, because you can't choose a team, you know, and it's obviously said, you know, you don't choose Villa, Villa chooses you. And I actually think there's some truth behind that. I'm very proud to be a Villa fan. Howbeit, the other side of the family, so my dad's brother, my uncle, is a Birmingham City fan. Yeah, so it's a little bit like Romeo and Juliet, you know, these two families that are that hate each other, but there's two people that sort of seem to glue them together. But yeah, Villa Park, Aston Villa is everything part of the Tinsey's household.
So Sam, I'm looking at your screen at the moment, and I see that fantastic flag behind you, Villa and Proud. Tell us all about Villa and Proud, what it's all about and how it came up.
Yeah, so I'm a gay man myself, and like I said, you know, I've supported Villa all my life. It's something that I can't take away, you know, and how I put it. So, you know, I'm coming out to people that are listening to this right now, and for anyone that is listening and thinking, oh, you know, what has this got to do with football, this sort of stuff? It's got a lot of things to do with it, because there's been many days that I go to Villa Park and I genuinely, you know, when I wasn't out, I've sat next to my dad for 20 odd years, and I never felt comfortable, and football never made it comfortable to ever talk about it. And I think as men anyway, you know, we're sort of not really meant to ever talk about our feelings, but anyway, it sparked on a little bit of an idea. I already did stuff around LGBTQ plus inclusion. So that's for lesbians, gays, bisexual, trans and queer and other people to get involved in football. So I run a football team, a soccer team here in the UK. And with all that work, Aston Villa approached me and found out that I was a Villa fan through something that went out on media through The Guardian or whatever, and they approached me, and I went to the club and we set up Villa and Proud. You know, I came up with the name. I got the club to actually design the logo. So we're very fortunate because we have the asset to the Aston Villa lion, which is on our logo. And Villa and Proud was born on the 5/5 in 2018. So November 2018, Villa Park was 5/5 against Nottingham Forest, the first ever 5/5 to be played at. To ever be seen at Villa Park in all competitions that it's ever taken part in. And obviously it's got a massive history, Villa Park. And just really fortunate that that launch was also in tandem with Villa and Proud being launched. So our mission statement, if I can say, is our mission statement is, so our whole point is to empower, support and build LGBTQ plus inclusion. And that's with the fans, the players and the staff of Aston Villa Football Club. And we're a network, you know, we're not a group, we're not exclusive, we're inclusive to everybody that just genuinely wants to make sure that their match day experiences are the best possible that you can be, you know, be happy.
I mean, yeah, and to speak to a little bit about just the kind of place for it, I feel like it's hard for me to sort of fathom in some ways, like living here in New York, it's, I think this culture around certain sports is a little different, but at the same time, like we still have a lot of that sort of bigotry that sort of falls into it. And it's something that is really sort of deeply entrenched and ingrained in football and culture for, you know, for worse, not for better, of course. But so kind of speaking to, you know, your experience as a fan growing up and then kind of coming into this position, starting this thing directly with the club that sort of you hold so dear. I just would love to hear a little bit about sort of the club's role, because I've seen via your website and just sort of your social media things, you know, the more visible ambassadors like Natalie High and, you know, Thomas Hitzelberger. And then also, you know, you have these sort of pre-match socials, sometimes with other groups that are sort of corresponding with your own with other teams. But I'm wondering how active the club has really been to support you folks in this. And what are some of the things that you've seen really positively change over the course of even just the 2 years, sort of the infancy of your organization?
Yeah. So Aston Villa's involvement has been great. You know, I'm not blind to the fact that I always think we can do better. And I know people at the club will know that I don't shut up. You know, why do I do it? It's a really, really important area to look at, because if I could look at my younger self sat down in the Doug ASP5 block for all those years when I knew I was gay, yeah, I couldn't even come out to my parents, to anyone around me, to my friends. But football was genuinely such a passion. I was worried that I would lose my dad. I was worried that I would lose everything that I held close to me, and that was Aston Villa. So the why is, I want to try and look at my younger self and think, how can I make it a much better environment for my younger self? And that's the same for any other Villa fan and away fans that turn up at Villa Park. And the club have been fantastic. You know, it's been slow at times. You know, I do a few emails that I know people at the club will be up, you know, give me a call. And but it's healthy. It's healthy to continue to go, because Aston Villa is, you know, the largest sporting organisation in Birmingham, one of the biggest clubs in the country. You know, it's the fifth most successful club in the country, and that has a level of responsibility as well. You know, and from day one with Villa and Proud, you know, I wanted it to be seamless. I wanted it to be an identity part of the club. I didn't want it to be about me. I didn't want it to be exclusive. I just wanted it to be something that has grown legs and sort of wings and wanted to be an identity of itself. And that all comes from the members. You know, we have 400 members now. You know, we have almost 200 people. This is at Villa Park that identify as LGBTQ+. And for people to think that, you know, it is a minority. You think of 43,000 people sat at Villa Park. It's a minute a minority, but there's many people that still sit there at Villa Park who don't feel ever comfortable to potentially go hand in hand with their boyfriends, you know, to Villa Park. You know, we should be making sure that Villa is a theatre. You know, Villa Park is a theatre where people can turn up and enjoy the whole day, enjoy who they're sat next to and be enthralled by the game, but just realise that we have a mixture of communities around us. And yeah, so I think with the club, I think we're going on the right way. And the way I do look at it is, you know, Aston Villa Football Club is an oil tanker. And, you know, if you think like, so if you put this into your head, you know, Tom Hanks, obviously Villa fan, but let's put Tom Hanks into this from Castaway. And that point when he breaks free from that island and he's just floating on a raft is, and then he wakes up. It was actually by that whale, which was really nice of the whale, but that massive oil tanker that was in the background, huge. That's what Villa is through the seas, right? But you're having to say it, turn or stop. And it, the amount of energy that takes to turn something big like Villa, you've got to take it step by step. It can't just be switched on. It's not a light switch on and off. But yeah, I mean, I think we have a fantastic fan base. Yes, we're not perfect. That's football. That is looked across the whole of football. And yeah, we're doing some great stuff and we can't be more thankful. And we can't be more thankful of Villa. And yeah, the last thing I will actually just say on this, because maybe some people still don't understand, is that Aston Villa is everything part of me. And someone asked me tomorrow, right, you're going to go and support Man City. I couldn't do that. I wouldn't ever have the same love or passion or desire for that club. It just wouldn't happen. It's a natural feeling that I have towards Aston Villa, and it will always be like that. That's the same for my sexual orientation. It wasn't chosen. It was something I was born with, something I didn't realise until I was later. And I can't change that. And football shouldn't have to make it an environment where you have to be a different person. You know, you turn up and you have to be a different person. You should be turning up to Villa Park and just having a great day, regardless of the result. I know the result was always going to make me feel good or bad, but we've got to make sure that the environment around, you know, players, around the staff and around all the fans, to just know that Villa Park is like the best place they've ever had. And the best experiences should be at Villa Park and at all other stadiums around the country.
Absolutely. Couldn't agree more. In your time as part of Villa and Proud, and probably before that, have you felt a difference? Are things getting better, would you say, in terms of increased awareness? I don't know, reporting of issues from, you know, if we hear, say, the likes of homophobia and different types of abuse in the stadium or online, do the members generally feel more comfortable at the games, would you say, as well?
It's difficult to say because obviously 50% of the time that we've existed, COVID has being a part of that. And I mean, I'd do anything to be back in the stadium right now. I think we all would. I think what Villa and Proud does bring, you know, it brings an identity that people start to realise, you know, when coming up with the name Villa and Proud, the most important thing to me is that Villa Park and stadiums up around the country are people that are going to be gay, bisexual, trans, people that are going to be from Asian communities are going to be minorities in these stadiums. And we've got to bridge the gap, but we can't do it alone. We have to have everyone involved. And when we talk about discrimination, you know, when we talk about diversity, you know, people kind of switch off and they say, what's it got to do with football? You see it every day. You know, there's a lot of work done on racism. Do I think the Premier League do enough on it? Do I think the EFL do enough on it? Do I think the FA do enough on it? Of course not. But I know, you know, we know there's that trend is across the world as well. And we've got to try and break it down, but we've got to do it in positive ways. You know, we've got to make people feel empowered to report, because I tell you what, I don't know if you've ever had to report anything, but it's the most demoralizing situation. You know, we all live really busy lives now, you know, nonstop, you know, 24/7, bam, 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 you know. And yes, you go and get negatively. I've had to report, and I've never had to report at Villa Park until 2019. And unfortunately, someone in front of me was using the word faggot. And it was interesting. I actually spoke to the guy during the game, and he was quite erratic and extremely passionate about Villa, but just a bit too much. And I was just talking to him at half time, and you know, I can't remember the game, and we were just having a conversation. He had no idea that I was gay, and there would be no part of that for me to go, by the way, I'm gay, or I have something tattooed on my head to say that I'm gay, because it's a characteristic that can be hidden. Anyway, we had a conversation, and he seemed all right, you know, and he turned around for the second half, and when he shouted faggot three times at the pitch, I had to get up and walk out, and I've never had to do that at Villa Park. And I was worried about if any, what I should do. But yeah, reporting it is a nightmare, because it's like a double negative. You've just faced something negative, and this can come from an ally. You know, allies can be in the audience, you know, in the stands, you know, watching the game. And let's say it's a father that has, you know, a gay daughter or something like that, and someone says a homophobic slur, it can really put them off. But the amount of work you've got to go and put in terms of reporting, does it put you into a position where you then got to do a report with the police? Yes, it's negative, negative, negative. But to say that I see the game changing, I don't know yet. I don't know how it's going to be. I don't think enough is really done. I still think people still cling on to the fact that, why is there anything being done? You know, it's football. But we have to realise that we pay to go and watch someone at work. Yes, they go and get paid, whatever. Great, you know. That's irrelevant to me, but we're paying to go and watch people at work. And we think it's acceptable to go and see stadiums and just shout whatever we want without any real repercussions. But I think the club are doing some good stuff. I think when it does reopen, I know they're going to have a text line that Villa fans can just easily text saying that they can report discrimination. You know. So yeah, it's difficult to say where we're at right now. But it's good to see the really good visibility on Twitter. And it's great to see a lot of Villa fans interact with that as well.
Yeah, and you know, I think to your point about just like the really tough sort of instance of reporting, like I'm a cis straight man, but I'm also a person of color, and having had to do that, like, for different reasons, I can fully understand and sort of relate to the fact that, like, it is, there's nothing, like, you feel vaguely good about the fact that, like, perhaps this will lead to a positive interaction and a learning moment, but, like, besides that, it is one of the worst things you have to do, knowing. So first of all, I'm sorry you've had to go through that. And second of all, it's, you know, for all folks who've even consider themselves allies, but like find themselves in that situation, like just understanding like a community effort goes a long way to sort of like preventing that sort of reinforced trauma. Mm-hmm. Just thinking a little bit about, you know, the network that you have created for folks, mm-hmm. and understanding that it's grown to the way it has, it's fantastic to hear. And hopefully, you know, it's only going to continue doing so as the years go by. I just want to talk quickly about sort of your interactions with fans, not only just in the UK, but beyond, because, you know, Villa is a global club. It has fans all over. And while the UK is certainly not perfect, I do think as in terms of just LGBTQI rights and like sort of visibility, it is a place that is definitely further along in that process than perhaps other places. So I'm wondering what your interactions have been like with fans, be it as, you know, folks in the spectrum of, you know, LGBTQI plus, or folks who sort of identify as allies across the world, and sort of what your role has been in sort of bringing them into the fold, if you will, or supporting them as they have their own sort of questions of, you know, feeling like belonging, or perhaps even further questions of identity.
Yeah, yeah. So just for anyone, again, like listening to this and thinking, what is an ally? So we do a campaign called Villa Allies, which is there to get people to understand that actually we all have a responsibility in being allies. So an ally is basically supporting someone else's differences, different to your own, that are subject to discrimination. And yeah, Villa Allies is really important because, like I said, you know, the whole point of discrimination is on minorities, and minorities need to be a majority of people to sort of understand the difficulties that do face people. You know, football is a global sport. you know, the next World Cup is going to be played in a country where it's illegal to be gay. And the thing is, we've all got an active role. Myself, you know, as a white male, to support women's equality, people of colour, disabilities, you know, just being the best person or best person possible in circumstances where people need help, and a friend. And that's what an ally is a friend. And yeah, we know that Aston Villa is a global club, and it makes our reach easier at times. You know, imagine you're a Southend United fan, you know, just as much passion as a Villa fan, but you're a Southend United fan and you're gay, you're bisexual or trans there. Your minority is even smaller, and the work there is even more important at times. But we've got a fantastic network, you know, our network, and that's why we changed this year. You know, we changed our brand a bit from group to network, because we understand that we want to be a web, you know, we want to be people where they can have these connections. You know, we have groups that are parents that have, you know, I think there's a group in Birmingham that's basically parents that have LGBTQ plus children, and kind of sometimes want questions answered, because believe it or not, like the day that I realized I was gay, it wasn't like the Matrix. I woke up the next day and I was sort of downloaded with all this information about what that means, what do I do, what does LGBTQ plus stand for. I had none of that to understand, and I'm still learning myself. But our networks across America have been fantastic. And I've always shared this passion with North America, because I went to an MLS game in Seattle. It was Seattle Sounders versus Vancouver Whitecaps, which was a derby. Did not feel like a derby, but it was a derby. But I sat in that stadium with Gary, my boyfriend, who's a Charleston Athletic fan, and I have never, ever, ever felt so comfortable at a football match, ever. And that was in a completely different country. And that kind of sprung in my mind, actually, the problems we have in the UK. We have a really, and football is tribal. I never want that to change, you know. But we've got to do it in better ways. We've got to make sure that people actually genuinely have a good day, because people get massively depressed when we lose a game. We should be having these networks that actually pick people up. So our pre-match socials, we launched 250 days ago. We instigated it as the first ever group to develop these pre-match socials, which was all done online. We had members come from America, and it was really interesting because we've seen people develop. People very quiet, weren't really saying anything, and now they are the person that they are just most comfortable with and the person that they are. And the great thing is that when it comes back down to Villa Park reopening, people have gained an experience of new friendships that they never had beforehand. And they're going to turn up to Villa Park. They're going to be able to turn up to events with Villa and Proud, and people are going to know people and have a friend. And yeah, it's really important that as Villa and Proud, we stay positive. You know, you're never ever going to win an argument if you start off negatively. We do everything as positive as possible. We had a group from Poland join on a call. Now, for anyone that doesn't understand or know, you know, in Poland, LGBTQ plus rights are getting worse weekly. It's now turning to the point where it's going to become illegal. There's places where it is illegal to be gay in Poland. And we had a Polish group turn up because around Rainbow Laces in December last year, they reached out to us and said, we just want to share the same values that other club of Aston Villa. And how can we do that? And this is a group in Poland where, you know, it's counteracts, you know, like Russia and that. It's illegal to even promote anything. And when they say promote, you know, like propaganda of LGBTQ plus rights, which is just human rights, people that just genuinely want to live their lives. So it's and that shows you the importance of football, because people's mentalities have changed in areas. And to be fair, and to credit to this group in Poland, their views may already have been quite liberal and inclusive. But yeah, it's good, and we've got a fantastic network, and we're looking forward to the day that we could potentially go out to North America to any of their North American events, because it's really important. And I think if the MLS, to be fair, I think the Premier League itself is kind of naive, kind of snob, has a bit of snobbery. We see that with VAR, for example. You know, the Premier League think they do it right when, you know, sports like rugby and cricket do it right. Yet the Premier League still can't get it right. And it's the same with LGBTQ plus issues, same with racism. They're not really changing it. They're just sort of virtue signaling at times, you know. So, yeah, it's good.
Fantastic, Sam. I thought we went for a whole podcast then for a minute without talking about VAR, but not quite, nearly. two things, if you don't mind, just to cover off what you've just been speaking about, really. One is I'm a season ticket holder. I'd love to become an ally. How do we go about that? And which clubs do you perhaps look at to say they've got it right? You know, that's the sort of way you want Villa and Proud to operate. And Villa to operate as a, you know, to be more inclusive.
Yeah, no, definitely. Great question. So to be an ally, and what I want people to realise as well is being an ally is be really proud of it. Be proud of the fact that you're willing to stand up and support people. So to do this, and this is online, you know, so you can be an ally online. You know, we did have an incident last week. Where there was some homophobia, casual homophobia. And what we mean by that is that the word banter comes around and people were using this sort of slang terms. I won't repeat it because it was highly offensive and discriminatory, but that person that did do that tweet has actually realised the issues that he caused. It was actually on our pre-match social today with Leicester. And signed up as an ally as well, and realised actually what he needs to do is better use his experience for that to try and help change people's opinions. So to be an ally, to be a Villa ally, you can go onto our website, which is really simple, villaandproud.co.uk, and you can sign up as a member, and you can fill out some details. There are some really cool competitions as well that we get to do, and some events that we will definitely be holding where people can get involved. The most important thing as well under this allies thing, because I'm signed up as an ally as well, you know, because I'm gay, like I said, you know, the ally side of it is that I'm supporting people's colour, because the LGBTQ plus community is not, you know, specific community. It comes under every other ethnic minorities, disabilities, genders, sexes, all these sort of areas. So yeah, you can sign up by that. You can also do it through our Twitter. Actually take that away, but you can find us on Twitter. You can actually sign up through our Facebook and Instagram, but yeah, you can go to our website, have a look and read through some stuff. And your second question was clubs. Yeah. So the clubs that are doing it well, or groups, it's a really interesting one, because I think we all have our separate identities on where we want to go. And I know that I'm the chair of Villa and Proud, and you know, we have a committee of five, and I do think we do it very well. I think as Villa and Proud, we are up for an award with the FSA, which is a national award for all the work that we have done. But I think clubs where Aston Villa could look at and think, you know, that's what we want to be achieving, is probably clubs like Tottenham have done very well. Leicester, to be fair, have done exceptionally well this month. Yeah, it's an interesting one. But what I think is most important is that we do it collectively. Football as clubs need to be doing stuff. And I don't think campaigns such as Rainbow Laces are really doing any kind of impact. Yeah, it gives me a bit of empowerment for a day. Makes me feel good to see a rainbow. You know, I'm a bit obsessed with rainbows. I'll buy anything with a rainbow on it. But the thing is that I kind of want to see the initiatives from clubs run their own campaigns, not have to be sort of pushed by an organisation to say, right, it only happens from this date to this date. If you've missed it, like Villa did, because our Rainbow Laces fixture had been called off because Newcastle had tested positive with COVID cases. That was it. Our Rainbow Laces fixture was just forgotten, because you can't do it outside of a binary date, because we're talking about equality, but it can only be done for a weekend. It can't be done throughout 365 days. So if anything, if I was to put a call to action, I do think genuinely the Premier League, the FA, and the EFL just need to look at themselves and actually realise the bigger impact is you have people like Thomas Hitzlsperger, who could only come out after retirement. He still works in football, obviously, as the CEO of Stuttgart in Germany. He's our ambassador, but still not enough's been done. If anyone hasn't seen the video with Carlson Cole, it is on our Twitter still. There was a video where Carlson Cole, who did play with Thomas Hitzlsperger for a period, said to himself, like, did I do enough to make Thomas feel welcome? He doesn't think he did. And that's really honest of him to say that. So, but as allies, we can't do any of this great stuff without the allies. The allies are the most important part to this whole project, because we need people to stand up. You know, if we could have 10,000 allies at Villa Park, it's not 10,000 people sat together. It's 10,000 people all around the stadium that are going to stand up and just say, you shouldn't be saying that. You shouldn't be calling that out. You should be calling out discrimination. But you doing that, you know that there's someone else next to you that's going to be the same. And that's what we want to get to. Villa Park is just, it should be a place where we should just have a great day out. The whole football experience isn't 90 minutes. It's 24 hours. It's a week leading up to it. It's the whole season. It's the whole, sometimes your whole life. And it's the most important part to our footballing lives. And why would you want to sort of deny that from people that just want to enjoy it as well?
I mean, phenomenally well put, Sam. And, you know, I think there's something so much to be said about, you know, performative allyship versus sort of active allyship, and, you know, creating an environment where people are actually willing to sort of put the work in to create the outcome that they're looking for, rather than, again, like, it's great to have a warm-up shirt with a rainbow on it or, you know, the laces, but, like, is that really sort of like the pat yourself on the back moment, or is that the sort of moment where, like, we're actually trying to create awareness and collective action else after that? So speaking to that, and I think we'll sort of end on this, we don't want to keep you too long, but in terms of, you know, active allyship, or just more just actively what Villa and Proud has been up to, are there certain initiatives people can get directly involved in that are happening ongoing throughout the season, events that they should, you know, be on the lookout for that are sort of ongoing, things you just want to plug?
Yeah, I mean, I will just add that we are all voluntary. None of us get paid to do any of this. It does take a lot of effort to get things moving. But what can we do? Obviously, we're very limited because of the whole circumstances with COVID. In April, we will be launching our next stage of our Villa Allies program, which we're going to open it up to a committee. So we have a committee with Villa and Proud. Villa Allies is a campaign of Villa and Proud, but we want to open it up where there is a separate committee, working committee with Villa Allies. And we want that committee to be as diverse as possible, with people that understand what allyship is about, the importance of it in football. And we're working on a number of really cool ways to get people involved, which we will be launching in April. The thing is, the most important thing is, as well, is that people kind of interact with us. And I know sometimes people talk about social media, and there's a lot of Villa groups and all that sort of stuff, and people want to have interaction and this and that. The most important thing is that as an ally as well, you're kind of spreading anything that is related to Villa and Proud, I guess. You know, we're not trying to say, oh, you have to do this, this and that, but we actually do some really cool stuff. During this month, we've got something going out, which is around mental health, which is called Time to Talk. It's actually a video. So this is a disclaimer. No one knows this. So there's a video that's going out with Natalie Haig, two of our committee members, Tom and Sarah, that work in mental health, and also the mental and wellbeing officer of the foundation. Had an open discussion on why it's important that we do talk, because we don't. So I think sign up as a member, because you get monthly out loud newsletters, which we are developing more and more, with exclusive content from Aston Villa themselves. and stuff that we're going to be working on, where it actually opens the opportunity up to many great possibilities that are going to happen when we can finally get the doors back open at Villa Park, where people can get involved in many cool stuff that I can't really talk about, because we want it to sort of be a day where people can go, wow, I really want to be a part of this. So, but most importantly, that we're all equal, you know, we all have an equal chance of making football a really, really, you know, it's a great sport anyway. You know, it's a beautiful game, but we can make it a lot better, definitely. So, but we can't do that if we can't have enough people together with the same mentality for it.
I mean, phenomenal way to end it, Sam. Thank you again so much for coming on, sharing all of this. I think it's, you know, we're definitely going to try and share as many of the socials and some of the events for folks to get involved and actually be able to sort of quickly access that through everything. But again, we just thank you so much for your time, taking the effort to chat with us, and also just like for the work you're doing for a greater community of folks within the larger Villa community. You know, I think we're all generally a part of it, but to look after our own is so important. And, you know, I think you've taken some really wonderful steps towards that. So thanks again for joining us.
No, thank you very much.
Other than that, I think the only things we have to share, James and I, you know, we're still going to be putting out the GoFundMes for the Gambia Lions, for the Ghana Lions. They're doing their sort of fundraising efforts. So as folks can get involved in that as well, you know, again, looking after our own in different ways, whatever you're willing to share, I think is, you know, incredibly helpful. Besides that, I mean, keep sharing this, you know, liking, subscribing, you know, making sure other folks can hear the conversations like this with folks who are, you know, parts of all different corners of the Villa family around the world. But James, anything you'd like to share with the nice people?
No, just thank you so much to Sam, and I'm looking forward to signing up. Really inspiring.
Absolutely. And yeah, if no one has anything else to share, we'll be back for after the Leeds game, hopefully celebrating some of Sam's optimism paying off. But until then, up the Villa.
Up the Villa.
Villa.